Hey everyone, Bob WP here, and welcome to Woo Biz Chat, the Do the Woo podcast show. Woo! Woo! Woo Biz Chat is sponsored by AirWallex. The online payment plugin allows you or your clients to localize your WooCommerce store checkout experience by enabling customers to pay with preferred currencies and payment methods. And OmniSend, the solution for email and SMS marketing with their CRM solution for WooCommerce shops and your own website while saving you time with pre-built automations that drive sales.
Hello and welcome to Woo Biz Chat at Do The Woo. I'm Katie Keith from Bantu Plugins, and today we're going to be talking about onboarding, whether you're a freelancer wanting to improve the onboarding for new clients or whether you're an e-commerce store owner needing to onboard customers who buy your products. And to help us with this, we've got special guest Laura Elizabeth. Welcome, Laura.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So can you tell us a bit about yourself and what you do to start?
Yeah, sure. So as of right now, I have a WordPress plugin called Client Portal. But my background is actually in web design. So I worked at an agency for a year or so, and then I branched out and I did freelancing for about 10 years. Client Portal was made, it's possibly something I'll get into later, but it was made out of the work I was doing with my freelancing clients. So it was sort of like a mix between a project management tool and really having nothing at all. I started that back in 2016. Still take on the occasional freelancing project, but it's pretty rare these days to do that. So, yeah.
And tell us about onboarding. Why do you think it's so important, and what got you into that as an area particularly?
Yeah, I think onboarding is, I've always loved what onboarding can do for you. I always felt I was quite insecure back when I was a freelancer, and I felt that having a really good onboarding process really set the stage for how the project was going to go. You can make it really repeatable and reuse it with all your clients. And it just helped me because I didn't want to go into the full agency route. I wanted to stay just as a solo freelancer. So it helped me do things like juggle multiple clients. If I had like a really solid onboarding process in place, it helped my clients trust me a little bit more, because you know, when you start a project with somebody, really the beginning, it's kind of sets the tone for how everything's going to go. So if I had a really solid onboarding process, you know, it just started the project off right. And I just felt like by having a system in place, it actually took me a really long time to put something in place. But once I did, things start going a lot more smoothly. My clients were happier. I was happier. It just worked out a lot better.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because when people hire a freelancer or even an agency for their website, really, they've made the decision based on lots of things like your portfolio, the quality of your website, possibly a recommendation. But ultimately, it's not like hiring a doctor or something where there's a specific qualification. You have to prove your credibility in the early stages of the project. And I suppose if you're a kind of all over the place at the beginning and you're not providing clear onboarding, then that might make them doubt the decision they've made to hire you.
Yeah. And I even find that now. So now I'm more on the other side of things, where I'm the client and I hire freelancers. And it really does make such a difference. If I hire someone and I can see they've got some kind of process in place, it doesn't need to be elaborate, but if they have things they can give me where they tell me, you know, how they work, answer maybe commonly asked questions or things like that. And it just feels like they've done this before. Like, nobody wants to feel like a guinea pig, right? Or like a test subject when you're doing a client project. If I'm hiring someone, I want to feel like they do this, they live and breathe this, they do this all the time. They know how to handle the entire project, no matter what it is. It could be a website project, it could be consulting, marketing, whatever. Yeah, I just feel like onboarding, also throughout, of course, but onboarding in particular just really helps gain that trust, and it just sets the whole project off from right from the start.
Yeah. So since we're talking about the freelancer and agency side of onboarding, let's focus on that a bit more first. And then later on, we can talk about onboarding for e-commerce store owners. So can you walk me through an optimal onboarding experience for a new client project? What should that include?
Yeah, so it kind of starts slightly before the onboarding when you're, you know, qualifying the client. And I like to put quite a lot of effort into qualifying my clients because I'm sure everyone's experienced. You will get on calls with client, you'll give them, or a potential client, you'll give them a ton of advice. Things are going really well. And then you send your proposal and then they're like, oh, wait, I have a budget of like $500. And
always.
It's just completely wasted. I feel like everyone has to learn that the hard way. So I think it kind of starts with a lot of qualifying of the client. And you could do that with things like intake questionnaires, the discovery call, the proposal. I actually did a lot of paid discovery sessions with my clients. So when I onboarded my clients, I was doing it before I was doing maybe like a website redesign project. So it would be paid discovery, if anyone doesn't know. It's basically where you do essentially the whole proposal stage as a productized service. So your clients will pay you to do a proposal, which might sound a little bit kind of crazy because you can imagine what client would want to pay for a proposal, but it's kind of like a bit of a consulting thing. So you work with them to figure out everything they need in their business. You deliver them a report where they can take it, implement it themselves, they can get someone else to do it, or ideally, it'd get you to do it. And I found that had a ton of benefits overall, both for me and my clients. But specifically with the onboarding, it really helped because almost every client went through that same process. So it was really easy for me to create reusable assets that I would use with them. And I would have like a VA who would help me send the right things at the right time. So it would be things like I would have contract, like an NDA or something like that. And then we would be sent a, you know, different questionnaires for their business, gathering all the data, send them a getting started guide, what to expect, the payment, everything was a lot more automated. So I always think with onboarding, if you can have some kind of fixed scope project that you do at the start, it makes your job a lot easier. But even if you can't do that, what I tend to recommend is there's no one size fits all with onboarding. It's really a case of laying out your process and figuring out what your client needs, what problems your clients tend to have. So a lot of people have issues with clients, maybe micromanaging projects or scope creep or things like that that crop up during the project. Are there ways in your onboarding to help solve those? So could you say something like, you know, it's quite likely with big custom projects that the scope is going to change. That's absolutely fine. And we expect that. Here's how that will work. And that's just an example of something you could include in your onboarding to help you later down the road. I know for me, scope creep was a particularly difficult one. But I also liked to set them up in a kind of system where they could access everything at one time. And this is kind of where Client Portal came about, because I tried onboarding them into different project management tools. And I would find that they were really useful for me, particularly if I was working with contractors on their project, or if you're an agency, project management tools are pretty great. But then when I'd add my client to it, they didn't want to learn a new system. They didn't use it. They didn't log in. And actually, like I was saying earlier, now I'm more on the client side. I also hate being added to a project management tool because I don't want to change anything or post anything in it, because I don't want to mess up their already perfect looking system. And I just, you know, can't be bothered. So you end up resorting back to email.
Yeah, I totally agree. I hate it when I hire someone like, I don't know, an SEO agency or something like that, and they put me on their project management system. And there's so many, it's probably one I've never used before. And I don't care what their internal systems are as the client. things like notifications become a nightmare. You don't know how it works. You'll ask for an update and they'll say, oh, it was on this card here. Well, I didn't know that. And also, alternatively, you get a notification for everything. And I feel that generally adding clients to your internal project management tool is not in the client's interest. So yeah, it's good to have an alternative.
Yeah. And you also get that if your team is quite big, your client won't really know who they're supposed to be talking to. They won't know, are they supposed to be replying to this? Are they not? It just gets really overwhelming for them. And I'm similar to you. I hate being added to different project management tools because it's just hard. I felt like project management tools weren't really working for me, or they were working for me. They were working for me internally. I didn't want clients to see the kind of things I was talking about with contractors. And I've heard loads of horror stories as well of people who have accidentally posted something that the client can see that they maybe shouldn't have posted. Maybe it's about the client. I don't really know. But there's always the risk that's going to happen, right? You'll post something that they shouldn't see. So I thought, well, I'm not going to bother adding clients to my project management tool. But then when you take that away, if you have all these onboarding documents that you've created, so these getting started guides, these questionnaires, the contract, invoices, whatever it might be, if you take the project management tool away, you don't really have anything. So you tend to send these files through email and you have these really long email threads. But that really didn't feel polished and professional enough either. And I also had the problem where clients would come back to me and say, where's this file? I can't find it. I didn't save it, blah, blah, blah. And that would be really complicated. So I created a portal where they could sign up on my website, log in and just have everything there available to them. And it was totally separate from the project management tool. So it would only have the really very few things that a client actually needs to see and would need to access on a regular basis. And that really helped because it was sort of the middle ground between nothing and a project management tool. And I just created that, just in WordPress with private pages and all that kind of thing. I did eventually turn it into a product. It can be just something, a private area on your website that they can log into. And I found that was super useful for my clients.
Is that more work for the freelancer or agency because they have to populate that with, do they do things like project updates in it or simply the onboarding information?
So you can do either, really. I personally prefer to keep it very simple and repeatable. So I would set up a template and it would have all their onboarding documents that was the same for every single client doing that particular project. So it would be an onboarding template or a project template for a paid discovery, for example. And then I would have a separate one if I was doing a website redesign, or I would have a separate one, maybe, I don't know, copywriting or whatever services you offer. And you just put in the stuff that is common to pretty much every client as a template, so you don't have to recreate all that. And then if you have, however you store your deliverables, you would just link to what you're already using. So I wouldn't spend a lot of time uploading things to the portal. It was kind of like the way I kind of thought of it at the time was like a bookmarks bar that was, in a branded portal on your website that your clients could log into. So at the time I was doing websites and I would use InVision for my prototype. So I would just link to InVision. So it didn't really take an awful lot of time. But it is something that if you do have a VA, which I pretty much recommend almost all freelancers have one if they can, because it just makes life a lot easier. It's something that they can just go in and add the odd link to it. But I always recommend keeping it as simple as possible, actually having as little in there as possible, but making sure that what's in there are the things that your client needs to access time and time again.
That makes sense. So you've referred to VAs a couple of times. It's slightly off topic, but virtual assistants can be really useful. Do you have any tips on where to find one? Because a lot of freelancers can't afford to hire somebody freelance. And so what are the different ways you can find somebody to help with those tasks?
Yeah, so I've hired VAs from a few different places. The best one I had was from a website called Hawkey Handbook. I don't actually know if it's still around. I haven't checked. And I think that's what it was called. Gina Hawkey, she taught virtual people how to become virtual assistants. And then she had like a pool of people who you could post a job. And I had a virtual assistant there for years, and she was really great. I've also tried hiring just from people I know, because they're kind of tasks that you can, you know, really anyone can do as long as you've got good processes in place. But yeah, my favorite one was the Hawkey Handbook place where I hired a VA. It can take a little bit of trial and error, and hiring a VA is actually a lot of work upfront, because if you don't have systems and processes and things documented, it takes a long time to get that in place, and it can take a long time to train a VA. But once you've found that rhythm and they work with you really well, they're really invaluable, especially when working with clients. Because if you're like me, I was mostly solo but would just work with contractors. It was really hard doing the actual work, which is the bit I loved, and then dealing with, you know, new lead inquiries or keeping up to date with current clients, or even following up with leads that didn't work out, or, you know, doing outreach, all that kind of stuff that you need to do constantly. It just takes that off your plate to have somebody as a kind of middleman managing. For me, it was mostly email and client communication. So I think VAs are really, really important, but a big investment, both time and money up front.
Yeah, definitely. I used to use a company called Remote Staff for a VA for years, because we're a plugging company. I have a support team, and one of my support engineers spends half her time doing VA tasks, which might be finance or marketing or general admin or whatever. So I found that good, because they were already kind of trained in our products from doing support. They do VA tasks as well, and it gives them more insights into different parts of the business and things. So there's lots of ways you can get them without doing a traditional job advert to hire someone full time if that's not in budget.
Yeah, and you don't even need to hire full time as well. Like, I only ever had one full time VA, and I found it was actually a bit much. At the minute, I'm similar to you. I have a support person who does some VA tasks, and I think they only do a couple of hours a day. And really, that's enough, you know, to just get through your inbox and do, you know, whatever tasks, recurring tasks need to be done. I think 2 hours a day kind of minimum will get you through most client communication things that you might need to do.
Yeah. I find it really helpful to write a list of what I actually do before hiring somebody, because sometimes when you group your tasks, it's not what you think. So when I do it, actually, I need a finance assistant and a marketing assistant and very little general admin. So I might go for a general VA when that's not the skill set I need. So it is useful to actually write down what you do, because you may not have an understanding of that.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Time track, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. All of that.
Yeah.
So let's get back to onboarding anyway, because we went on a useful tangent then. We've talked about onboarding for clients who you're providing services for. So let's move on and talk a bit about onboarding for e-commerce stores. And it's something you may not really think of, because let's say if someone buys a pair of shoes or something on a website, they probably don't need any onboarding. But there are e-commerce products that do need some kind of support and communication from that company after making a purchase. An example might be a membership site where they're joining some kind of a club with an ongoing relationship. It might be that they've booked an event and they need information in the run-up to that event and the date of it. Or any kind of product that needs some kind of special advice or instructions for the customer to use it, which aren't shipped with the product, which happens in various industries. So do you have any advice about the email side of things? I know you and I have previously talked on a different podcast about your expertise in email marketing. So do you have any advice about how email might play a part in onboarding for e-commerce store owners?
Yeah, so funnily enough, I actually recently bought some shoes, and their onboarding was pretty good. they were running trainers or sneakers.
So you needed onboarding for shoes. Fine.
Yeah. It's funny because you say they didn't need onboarding for shoes, but these were specifically running shoes. So it kind of makes sense, you know, if they were just regular shoes, probably not. But it was quite nice because they sent a follow-up sequence of, you know, just different things about how to care for running shoes, how often to replace them, and tips on like running as well, because presumably if you're buying running shoes, you're probably a runner. And so I thought that was quite helpful. But I think with onboarding for emails, it's actually a really difficult thing to get right, because as you know, the inboxes are just full right now. And everything you buy, there's a lot of emails that come after you always get added to the newsletter. It's quite overwhelming. So the first thing I would say about that is to make sure you're not sending a newsletter at the same time you're sending onboarding. But with onboarding emails, I think one thing I really like that I've seen, this is more for like SaaS software, are people who send the odd email. I think it's maybe like once a week, I would say. Getting the timing right is important. And it's very, very short. And it's like one very small tip that I could read in a few seconds about using whatever software that I've just signed up for. And I think that's really great. That's actually something I want to put into my own onboarding, because I have, for Client Portal, I have, you know, a getting started guide and, you know, a few little things like that. I have like a new customer survey, because it's always good to try, if you can, to learn about people who have just bought. So it's finding that balance between things that you would find useful as the business owner plus what your customers would find useful. But yeah, I really like these new SaaS companies who are just sending these little tips, specifically in software, that are probably really obvious to the founder or people who use it regularly. It could be like a keyboard shortcut, I don't know, or just some really basic feature that just makes your life a lot easier. I think that's really nice, because I don't think people are reading emails, you know, they're getting so many, and I don't think they're reading them, they're as focused when they're reading them as they maybe were a few years ago, at least in my experience. So yeah, that's something I would try, but I haven't tested it, so I don't actually know.
Yeah, I really like that, keeping it short, because as you say, people do get email overwhelmed, but it is an opportunity still. With our plugins, we've created a unique sequence in MailChimp for each of our plugins with similar to what you said, but probably not as brief. So I will look at that. So for example, if someone buys our WooCommerce product options plugin, then we'll send an automated email straight away with instructions on how to set it up. After 3 days, we send a check-in email. How are you getting on? Here's a video. Here's some extra links to resources in case you're stuck, how to contact us, you know, those kind of things. Then with running shoes, if you're happy with them pretty quickly, you're going to keep using them. And when they wear out, hopefully buy from the same company. But with WordPress, we have an annual subscription. So we need the customer to renew after 1 year and 2 years. Which means that to encourage renewals, we want to have an ongoing relationship with the customer, which is largely automated, of course. So our emails after the first couple of weeks slow down, and there might be one every 2 or 3 months, and then they might speed up a bit shortly before each renewal. And like you mentioned, we provide tips. So for WooCommerce product options, an email after 4 months might talk about lesser used features like, did you know you could set a maximum quantity of how many pizza toppings the customer can buy, or something like that? Or did you know about this extra way of pricing your product options, and things that they might not know to help them get more value out of it? And then we might sneak in a marketing email every now and then recommending a related product, but that shouldn't be the main thing, of course.
Yeah, I do something similar. I actually have found it quite hard to time emails up to renewal time, because people could maybe upgrade their license or do kind of different things throughout that process. And I found it quite hard from a technical perspective to set that up. So I tend to have an onboarding sequence that's the same for everybody. It's fortunate for me because I only have one plugin as opposed to multiple. and it's all serving like a similar audience. After the onboarding sequence, it kind of just goes into my general monthly, or it's not always monthly, newsletter, where I'll share like a new example or a new case study or something like that. But I really want to have something in place that's more, you know, akin to when it's getting close to their renewal date. I just haven't found a way to actually implement that yet. But like you, I do also do a little bit of upselling as well, because I created a sister company from Client Portal where, you know, one thing I found was people, they love the portal, but they were having trouble putting together these like getting started guides and these intake questionnaires. They didn't know what to put in them. And whereas I did create portal templates, the portal templates didn't include content. So I created like a sister company that has these templates, that has all the exact, you know, wording that I would use with my clients. They're nicely designed, but easily editable, that kind of thing. So after, I think it's about 6 weeks or so, I do a little mini promotion for that and then give customers a discount if they want to buy that. But it is kind of a separate company. It's still mine. So I think there's room to upsell people. I think it's just important to upsell them for something that they genuinely would be interested in, rather than just whatever you have. Have you identified another problem that these customers tend to have that you could solve with a different product and upsell them on that? I think that's, you know, quite a good way. And I've never had any backlash about doing that, because like I say, it's something people genuinely want. So they're quite happy to receive those emails.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like I've got, I think, 19 premium plugins now, and we only upsell closely related ones. So say someone's bought a WooCommerce restaurant plugin, a lot of them sell things like pizzas or burgers that need extra toppings, which you can do with our product options plugin. So we'll email the restaurant customers, not saying, have you heard about WooCommerce product options? It's great. We will say, do you want to sell extra toppings and charge for them for your pizzas and burgers and so on, and be really, really specific. And those emails get quite a good conversion rate. In fact, we have an email that we send about a week after purchase, which recommends handpicked products based on what they bought. And that does quite well at getting that second purchase in.
The Airwallex online payments plugin allows you to localize you or your client's WooCommerce store checkout experience, so any size business is able to grow without borders. Setup takes minutes, and you'll find improved checkout conversion rates by offering Apple Pay, Google Pay, and 60 plus local payment methods. And since customers are not redirected to a different checkout page, that info is saved, and you can offer recurring payments with WooCommerce subscriptions. What really stands out with Airwallex is merchants are not forced to convert foreign incoming payments to their home market currencies, and those funds can be used to pay suppliers internationally. So, literally, you save money all around. It's all there at airwallex.com. Whether you're a product or a site builder, OmniSend can help you with your customer or client's email and SMS through their CRM solution for WooCommerce. Product builders can bring their plugins and SaaS to a new level for their customers by integrating with OmniSend. And for you developers and agencies, recommending them to your clients for managing their customer relationships is spot on, because it gives them the right tool to build their email and SMS lists, send targeted campaigns, create automation workflows, and track their results all from within their WordPress dashboard. With over 100,000 e-commerce stores already on board, have your clients and your customers get started for free by simply having them search for the OmniSend plugin on WordPress.org.
But let's talk a bit about tools. So I've mentioned that we use MailChimp to send that, but there are other things as well. Obviously, there's many competitors to MailChimp, and whichever email marketing platform you use, you can integrate with your WooCommerce website. There's also a WooCommerce plugin that I really like. It used to be called Follow-Ups, and then it got merged into a plugin called Automate Woo. It's on WooCommerce.com, and you can use that to send different emails to your customers based on what product they bought. So if you have running shoes, for example, then instead of doing it through your email platform, you could do it through your WooCommerce store and have a different product as the trigger for each email. So that's quite good. And we actually do ours, though, through ReCapture, because we sell through Easy Digital Downloads rather than WooCommerce, and hardly anything integrates with that, which is really frustrating. So we use ReCapture for our abandoned cart software and also for our follow-up emails that recommend related products and things. So there's lots of tools. What do you use, Laura?
So my tooling's changed a little bit. So I use ConvertKit for my emails. And then I did use Easy Digital Downloads, but I've actually just migrated completely over to Freemius. Mm-hmm. And that's really nice because it has all the abandoned cart features built in. It's actually got a lot of the email built in as well. So I'm putting a pause on my ConvertKit onboarding to just test out what they have out of the box, because they say they do a lot of testing with the emails and try to time them quite well and do all that kind of stuff. So I'm just having a look at that at the minute. Talking about personalization, one tool I really like, and I have to say I'm a bit biased because this is my husband's company, but he runs a company called Right Message. And that's really nice because what it allows you to do is if you have, say, so I would have for Client Portal, maybe I'd have agencies or freelancers, we have law firms, accountants, all those different industries. I can learn about different subscribers in ConvertKit and then change content on my website based on what I know about them. So for example, if I had a landing page and I was talking to an accountant via email, if they clicked through to my website, I could change, you know, the wording to speak more to accountants. And that's been really fun to play around with, just to make the whole experience more personal. One really easy example actually is if someone's already on your email list and they go to your website, instead of seeing a pop-up to join your email list, which is, you know, annoying for a customer, but also annoying for you because you can end up with duplicate subscribers, they'll see something else. So they might see nothing at all, or you could change it to be a pop-up for them to leave a review or join your affiliate program or something like that. So you can change what they're seeing on your website based on what you know about them and, you know, where they are in your funnel, which is pretty nice. But other than that, I keep my tooling pretty simple. It's mostly just, yeah, Freemius, ConvertKit, Right Message, and that's about it, I think.
Yeah, makes sense. About 2 months ago, I think we had Paul Halfpenny from the Personalized WP plugin on this show, and we talked about different personalization strategies, and there's a lot you can do. But we talk mostly about pre-sales, but that is a good point about onboarding as well, so that when customers log in, you can show them different information based on various factors. So there's a lot you can do with that, which is quite a kind of a modern approach that WordPress is just kind of starting to discover fairly recently, I would say.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy what you can do now. It's a bit scary sometimes, but it's fun to play around with. I think the thing that you can get caught up on is sometimes you can go a little bit deep on it and do a little bit too much. And the more complexity you add, I've learned this the hard way, eventually something's probably going to break or go wrong, and it can be really hard to untangle it. So I really try my hardest to keep things as simple as possible. But stuff like that is just really fun to play around with. And it does really work as well. So yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I'd suggest focusing on the biggest wins there. So not every possible customer's use case needs to have personalized content. Maybe pick out your biggest use cases that you get the most sales from and create targeted content for those, because that's going to have the most impact without being ridiculously complex.
Yeah, exactly. And just testing it as well, just making sure it works. It should work. Anything that's more personalized should work. But yeah, it's always good to test as much as you can.
Which is kind of hard because you have to replicate the environment it's targeted for, don't you?
Yeah, it's really hard. I find testing, it's a lot easier. The higher volume of everything you have, the easier testing becomes, because just because you get to see trends. If you don't have, you know, a ton of traffic, or you don't have like a ton of customers, it can be really hard to know why certain things happen. Is it a seasonal lull, for example? It's like July right now, so it's historically not a great month for, you know, well, really a lot of people, everyone's on holiday. It's just so hard to know unless you've got like a really big company to easily see those trends. But it's still good to try and keep an eye on it if you can, but just not get too focused on the details, not looking every day, looking at trends maybe across like months or, you know, even years sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's easy to panic if you have a drop in sales over the short term and you need to wait till it's statistically significant, if I can say that. Yeah.
Yeah. And get some like, and yeah, and it's hard because unless you track this data every year, so I've recently started keeping a spreadsheet of, and I've only done it for the last 3 years, but it is really useful. January is a particularly good month for me. Obviously, November is good. The summer is less good. And it's interesting to see. And I know that every year I've probably had the same level of panic during the lower months, that if I'd have just kind of kept an eye on these trends, I might not have needed to panic so much, because it just kind of happens.
Definitely. Yeah, last month we had Bryce Adams from Motoric on talking about reporting and how to get better data out of your online store, because people often are having to create spreadsheets and things like that, whereas you should just have it at the click of a button. It's kind of crazy how bad the reporting in things like WooCommerce and Easy Digital Downloads is straight out of the box. So you do need extra plugins and SaaSes and so on to give you what you need, or build it yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I find it hard with these digital downloads. I found it hard because I felt like they changed things quite a lot, and I was never sure if the numbers were the same. But I do actually find, no matter how good the reporting is, I do find something really useful about putting it into a spreadsheet each month, because it forces me to kind of really look at it and see where it's changed. That might just be a me thing, though.
Yeah, everyone works with data in different ways and so on. We ended up building our own custom system for Easy Digital Downloads to give us the data we needed, because it was just so difficult. And then we found out this week that they changed something a few months ago that had broken all of our data. So we thought we'd had a massive drop in sales and a massive increase in renewals, but they had just changed internally how they classified sales and renewals. So it was a definition change, and we were ages trying to work out why this would have happened. So yeah, never easy.
Yeah, that's a nightmare.
So another aspect of onboarding, which I think people often forget about, is the sequence that happened when the customer places an order and immediately afterwards. So since this is Do the Woo, I'll use WooCommerce as an example. So with WooCommerce, you have built-in emails and order statuses. And then when you change the order status, it triggers an email. And I often find the default ones really unhelpful. I know Woo are actually working on this at the moment and thinking about how to improve the order statuses and the corresponding emails. But like, I ordered, I think it was a Bantu t-shirt actually, you know, customized with the logo. And so I received the email saying, thank you for your order. Fine. It said when it would ship. Fine. And then I received it. And then about a week later, I received an order completed email from them. I'm like, hang on, I've already got it. I don't care that you've marked it as complete on your system. And it wasn't about me as the customer. And I think that all store owners should think about things like these statuses. Another one is when you order a digital product in WooCommerce, it will set it to processing and send an email. And then you have to manually set it to completed, which sends another email. But of course, a digital product has been served automatically at the time they place the order. And so they don't need another email. So you have to use a plugin like Order Status Manager to disable the completed email and all that stuff. So I'd say test it and think about your customer. What would you add anything to that, Laura?
Yeah, just that it's always a good idea to periodically go through and buy your own product, you know, just do a test purchase or something and just see, you know, what happens, because things do change a lot. Like you know, like even like you said with the easy digital downloads changing something, you never know what's going to change. I recently did that and I found that all my images in the emails were coming up really massive. I guess ConvertKit had changed something or something had happened. But you just don't know until you've gone through it as the customer. And that's where you can really easily find those things where you're getting these emails where orders are being set from process to complete and then they're getting a notification. You can go in and just hopefully turn that off. But yeah, that's probably the best way to do it. I would say like, I don't know, maybe every 6 months or I don't know, just go in and just do a test purchase.
You'll probably be surprised at how many emails your poor customers are receiving. Like, they get one from PayPal if they use PayPal and all the ones from your website. And you might have a per product email with instructions for that particular product all at the same time. And so you need to think, how annoying is that for people as well?
Yeah, exactly. You get 5 emails at once that hopefully you can condense into just one email, which would be perfect.
And you mentioned earlier about the subsequent emails and making sure, say, your newsletter doesn't go out at the same time as onboarding emails. So I think that's good advice on an ongoing basis too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's a lot you can optimize and it can, like I say, get messy. Even simple systems can get messy really quickly, depending on, you know, different customers, if they use a different email address. I know you can't account for every edge case. But yeah, just I went down the rabbit hole years ago of doing some really cool things with email marketing, but I've drastically cut it back now just to make sure that everyone's getting a similar experience and that I have a bit more control over what they're seeing. So I'm not sending any emails out by mistake or, you know, anything like that.
Yeah, and it can be a lot of work to keep all your emails up to date. We've got hundreds of automated emails because we have a sequence for each product. And I know they're not as up to date as they should be.
Yeah, I think a lot of people document, you know, they have like a master document of all of their, you know, sequences. And I started putting that together for mine as well, just to keep just somewhere completely separate, just in a Google Doc or something, to just write down the process. And this is similar to the client onboarding as well. It's how I got started with it, is just bullet point every single touch point with either the client or the customer in as minute detail as possible, as many different edge cases as possible, and then just try to like figure out what the most smooth process would look like, whether that's creating email sequences, whether it's creating templates, or, you know, even just templated emails using like Text Expander or something like that, just for these commonly these repeatable tasks that happen within your process, I think is really useful. And just spending it can take like an hour, maybe, if that, and super, super valuable.
Yeah, I have a Google Doc with a list of all our emails and when they're sent so that we can see it in one place, but that doesn't have the content of the email, so it's still a kind of big job to update them.
Yeah, and you have to remember to update when I make an update somewhere, update it elsewhere as well, which can be hard.
Yeah. So before we finish, let's talk about measuring success of your onboarding. How do you have any advice on how to track the effectiveness of your onboarding efforts and what you might look at to judge what you're doing?
So on the WordPress plugin side, I mostly look at refund rates. I think if I do a good job of onboarding, my refund rates go down. And I have actually found recently my refund rates has decreased by quite a lot. You know, in part, it's due to the fact that we did completely overhaul the product and it now uses the block editor and it's really, really nice. But another thing that I did was I put an awful lot of effort into the getting started video. And I used feedback that we've had from customers, common questions where, you know, customers have got stuck, things that seem really obvious to me as the creator of the product that weren't clearly obvious to the customers. I've then included it in the video. And I spent a long time making this video as good as it can be and just improving that onboarding process. And now I don't know, unfortunately, whether the refund rate has reduced because of the new product or the onboarding or a combination of both. But I have noticed anecdotally that we are getting far fewer support requests from people who are just struggling to get started with the product. So I don't handle support myself, but I do keep an eye on it. Most days I try and just see what people were asking, and I get my support person to do a weekly report with any, you know, just issues, common themes of issues people had. And virtually none since we released it, I think in, I want to say April, are how do I get started? And we actually did used to get that quite commonly before then. So that's kind of how I measure it. Like I say, it's quite a small company. Like, it's not a massive company, so I can't do a ton with like analytics and stuff. But yeah, I just keep an eye on refund rates and then just my general support in that respect. And then for client onboarding, it's similar to that, but even more extreme. You know, like you could have like hundreds of customers, but maybe like a dozen clients or something. So it's harder to manage and to really know. But you're generally talking to clients, so you're getting a feel for, are there any assumptions that they had that were perhaps wrong? If so, maybe you could fix that in your onboarding. Do they say, wow, I'm really enjoying working with you, this is really great? You know, that's something that can give you an indication as to whether it's done correctly. And one other thing I do with clients actually is I tend to send out a questionnaire when the project's only just started. And it's like similar to the questionnaire that you'd send at the end to get their feedback. But I do it kind of more towards the beginning and find out how it's going so far. You know, generally clients are pretty excited, and that gives me a really good indication of, you know, how did they find the onboarding experience? Was it good? Was it great? Was there any improvements? And that kind of thing is helpful. So yeah, I just track it really, I guess, anecdotally is the best way to say it.
I think that worked for clients in particular. You know, if they're asking questions that you should have told them, if they're asking really basic questions about the process, expectations, anything like that, then that's a problem with your onboarding, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's always ways you can fix that, especially if it's common things. Like I think I mentioned earlier, scope creep for me was always the biggest one. Like it always happened. And I hadn't set that expectation. I put together a proposal and it was fairly detailed, but something had changed. It may not have been the client's fault. It may not have been my fault, but something has changed. Well, who's responsible for taking on that extra cost? Is it me? Is it the client? And if you have these conversations in the early stages, it just makes things a lot easier further down the road when you're inevitably going to hit these roadblocks that everyone experiences when working with clients.
Yeah, scope creep is a good one because everybody deals with it. I find the best way to handle it is, one, to make it clear what was included, as you say, through clear documentation and proposal and all of that. And then when the customer does ask for something that wasn't in the scope, I think it's nice to be kind of positive. Wow, that's a great idea. I think that's a really big improvement to what we have planned. Let me cost it out for you. You haven't said no, that's not included, have you? That's a positive no.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would do as well. Is I would say, I would always start with yes. And I talk in a lot of Facebook groups with like freelancers and agencies. And it's really interesting to see it, you know, as a third party where a client, there's a bit of scope creep going on. A client needs something else. And the freelancer is already assuming that the client is going to be really annoyed if you charge them any more for it. But the client has not indicated that they're annoyed. Like, I've worked with people and the scope has increased. And I have, in my head, I'm thinking, of course, the price is going to go up, right? Like, I shouldn't need to say that's obviously going to happen. You know, but the freelancer could then go into this spiral of this is going to be a massive conflict. And they start with, I did say in the proposal it was going to include this, this, and this. This wasn't included. You know, I'm not going to do it. Whereas if you just say, oh, great idea. Yeah, it's going to, it'll be an extra blah, or let me cost it out, or whatever you say. But I think that's a great thing to do. I think I've never had pushback when I've just said it like that. Or if I have, it would be not a conflict, but more just like, actually, let's just wait on that and maybe do that later or something like that.
Yeah, the time you get pushback is when you don't tell them straight away. So if you send them a higher bill than expected at the end of the project, that can be a disaster. And I've made that mistake and lost a lot of money and had very unhappy customers in the past through when we were doing web design work. So you need to be clear before there are extra costs, but matter of fact about it. It's they probably assumed you would charge extra anyway.
Yeah, it's actually very similar to how I deal with my three-year-old. I've noticed that if she wants something and if I say no, if it's a no, if I say no the second she asks for it, there tends to be not really much of a meltdown, if any. Whereas if I dance around the subject and I sort of maybe give excuses or reasons and then eventually say no further down the line, that's when full-on meltdown happens. And I think it's kind of similar when just dealing with anyone. If it's don't string people along, you know, get their hopes up or, you know, whatever. And then, you know, even if you're in the right, dump something on them at the last minute, just be really upfront, professional, positive, calm, and just not defensive. And then things just generally, in my experience anyway, seem to just work out a lot better.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for this, Laura. It's been great. And I think we've covered a lot of really concrete advice that people can hopefully go away and implement in their own businesses. So where can people find you online?
So I mostly am around on Twitter. So it's at Laura Eliz with a Z Dunn. And if you want to check out Client Portal, the website's client-portal.io. Yeah, that's pretty much where I'm at. I'm not on LinkedIn yet, but I'm probably about to sign up because apparently that's the place to be.
Everyone's talking about it, but I just can't bear the idea of another social media.
I know. Yeah, I do have an account. I just haven't logged in since I was in university. So we'll see.
Same. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. You've been an amazing guest. And thanks to everybody who's watching as well or listening.
Lovely. Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.